Welcome to Protect the Granite State, a weekly show that explores the impacts of the proposed Northern Pass transmission line on New Hampshire. I'm Judy Reardon, and this week our guest is Susan Arnold. Susan is the Appalachian Mountain Club's Vice President for Conservation, and she's been my friend for almost 30 years now. Welcome, Susan, and thanks for joining me on the show.
Thanks, Judy. My pleasure.
Susan, tell us a little bit about the Appalachian Mountain Club. What's its mission? What does it do?
Sure, happy to. So the Appalachian Mountain Club is the oldest conservation and recreation organization in the country. We were founded in 1876. And our mission is to protect the mountains, forests, waters, and trails of the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic regions. And here in New Hampshire, we're a membership organization with 12 chapters, and our New Hampshire chapter has over 12,000 members. And regionally, which runs from Maine to our southernmost Potomac chapter, we have over 100,000 members and supporters who are involved with the AMC. And really, what our goal is as a conservation, recreation, and education organization is to introduce people to the outdoors, to get people enjoying themselves and having fun. And as they get into the outdoors and experience it and start to learn about it, we hope that they will also start to realize that they have a role in helping to take care of it. And that's really where my work comes in with the organization as the Vice President for Conservation. So I oversee our efforts to really implement that conservation side of our mission.
And what are some of the things the Appalachian Mountain Club does to try to get people outdoors?
Well, we run a number of facilities around the region of destinations like the eight mountain huts on the White Mountain National Forest, along the a day's hike apart along the Appalachian Trail. We have front country lodges in New Hampshire at the Crawford Notch and Pinkham Notch Visitors Center. We also have a new camp down in Harriman State Park in New York State and an outdoor center in the Delaware Water Gap in New Jersey, and a couple of other smaller run camps by volunteers around the region. I think it's a total of 42 different places that people can actually go that AMC facilitates for outdoors activities. We also run, with the help of thousands of volunteers, more than 8,000 outdoor activities annually, anywhere from day hikes in your local park to backpacking trips to Nepal to a bicycle trip or a paddle on the Connecticut River. So we really rely on a very large volunteer leadership-trained cadre of volunteers who are experienced in taking people into the outdoors and are doing it safely and, again, enabling people to have fun and also to learn and hopefully get involved. Another way we involve people is we maintain over 1,800 miles of trail in the region, including 350 miles of the Appalachian Trail and lots of trails in state parks, again, a bunch of state parks here in New Hampshire and all over the region. And finally, we now own about 75,000 acres of land in Maine, east of Baxter State Park and west of Moosehead Lake, where we are also creating a new recreation network based on a 90 miles of trail that we have helped to build four old sporting camps that are open for people to come, and also doing sustainable forestry there and some carbon sequestration projects. So trying to model different ways of making conserved land make sense for people to own and to enjoy.
I was looking at the AMC website this morning. The Appalachian Mountain Club also does scientific research?
We certainly do. That is actually really the foundation of the organization. It was some scientists and geologists, people who like to make maps back in the 19th century who were exploring the White Mountain region of New Hampshire, and that was really the nucleus of the start of the organization. So we have a highly skilled research team primarily based out of our Pinkham Notch facility that has been doing research on air quality and climate change, forest and river ecology, alpine ecology, for more than 40 years now. And in fact, we have climate records of snowpack, snowfall, snow melt, going back more than 80 years when Joe Dodge, one of the early leaders of the organization, started keeping track of those numbers in Pinkham Notch. So that is, in fact, one of the oldest climate records around, and we have access to that and help maintain it to this day.
Wow, that's incredible. And if somebody wants to join the Appalachian Mountain Club, Susan, how can they do that?
The easiest thing to do is go to our website, which is www.outdoors.org. That's www.outdoors.org. And you'll just find a button you can click on that says, you know, join, and you can sign up right online.
So obviously the Appalachian Mountain Club cares a lot about mountains and forests and conservation. What is the Appalachian Mountain Club's position on Northern Pass?
Well, AMC first learned about the Northern Pass project more than 8 years ago now, when representatives from Northern Pass sat down with us to introduce their project to us. And at that time, we told them, boy, we don't think this looks like a very good thing to happen in New Hampshire. At that time, it was 186 miles of totally above-ground transmission lines going right through the heart of the White Mountain National Forest, crossing the Appalachian Trail, and obviously having a huge impact on really, you know, sort of the heart and soul of some of the most scenic and iconic areas in New Hampshire. So we told them more than 8 years ago, before they had formally put forward an application, that this project looked like the wrong thing and in the wrong place in New Hampshire. So that's been our position for the last 8 years, that this project is not appropriate as proposed for New Hampshire.
What are the AMC's biggest concerns with the project as proposed?
Our biggest concerns are its impact on the natural, cultural, and scenic resources of this state, from forest fragmentation by cutting new right-of-way up in the northern part of Coos County, to impacting all kinds of scenic views that really are the sort of bread and butter of New Hampshire's tourism industry, to say nothing of the reason so many of us live in this beautiful place. And finally, that they have, it's just been a project that it's not needed. It's a project that's there to make money for the shareholders of Northern Pass, the partners of Eversource and Hydro-Québec, and it's not about keeping the lights on. And that really changes, you know, what you're willing to accept. It's one thing if there's a project that's absolutely required to get power to people who won't otherwise have it, but that's not what this project is about. So the fact that it has these really deleterious impacts on so many facets of our state, and that it's not really needed, it's the wrong project at the wrong time in the wrong place.
You know, in addition to not being needed, even the company's rosy forecast for its impact on electric rates, even their estimate is it's going to save people, you know, typical residential consumer about $2 a month. And there are other experts who've testified that it may provide zero benefit to electricity consumers in New Hampshire. So, that's part of the way I look at it is the costs, to our forests and scenic views and ecology are known and certain, and
irreparable.
And the benefits are completely speculative, and very small, even if they happen. Susan, we're going to take a break now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes to continue our discussion. We're talking to Susan Arnold, Vice President for Conservation at the Appalachian Mountain Club, about the Appalachian Mountain Club's views on Northern Pass. Welcome back. We're talking today to Susan Arnold, Vice President for Conservation at the Appalachian Mountain Club. You're listening to Protect the Granite State. Susan, just before the break, you mentioned the forest fragmentation that will occur in the uppermost part of Coos County and the impact on scenic views from Northern Pass. I was up in Clarksville this summer, and I'm ashamed to admit this. It was the first time I'd been to Clarksville, and I've lived here my entire life. But I was just so taken. The unspoiled landscape in Clarksville and the other towns at the uppermost northern tip of New Hampshire are just gorgeous. They're breathtakingly beautiful. And if I understand it correctly, Northern Pass is going to build towers up there. Is that true?
That's correct. That's the part of the route that they have chosen, over which they don't have existing right of way. So they have to construct new right of way, which means clearing trees and putting towers in that clearing where there were no towers before. And some of AMC's testimony before the New Hampshire Site Evaluation Committee has really focused on what those impacts are going to be on people recreating in some of those remote ponds and mountaintops that currently only have a view of a landscape that's been very lightly touched in a few places by agriculture or other sort of historic uses, but nothing like the industrial scale steel lattice towers that will be needed to carry Northern Pass.
There's a particular spot in Clarksville where you get this just incredible view of these rolling hills, and the folks who were showing me around pointed out that they're actually going to be Northern Pass, if it's built, Northern Pass transmission towers, these big metal towers you're describing, right on top of that hill. And I could be wrong, but I think a photo of the way it currently looks is actually used by New Hampshire Tourism Bureau to promote tourism in New Hampshire. It's just...
Yeah, it could very likely be, or just another spot an awful lot like that nearby, because there are some, many beautiful outlooks in that part of New Hampshire. I think a really important point to make here, too, is I think that a lot of people think about transmission lines and transmission corridors. They think about the fact that, well, we live with those already. They're everywhere, and much of Northern Pass is going to be an existing right-of-way. So, what's the big deal to add another line and additional towers? Well, it has to do with scale. We're talking about adding 1,100 new towers, some of which are going to be up to 160 feet tall, into right-of-ways or onto new right-of-way, as I was just describing. These currently in those right-of-ways are primarily towers that don't go over the forest canopy. They're anywhere from 40 to 70, 75 feet max. and often and much of the time made of wood. So the change that this project is going to inflict on what we now kind of think of is, all right, you know, their towers are not great, but it's wooden, and it's, you know, if you look over it, it doesn't stick up above the forest. It's a totally different thing that's going to happen with Northern Pass, and I think that's what's really important for people to understand.
Susan, you mentioned a minute or so ago that the Appalachian Mountain Club was participating in the site evaluation committee hearings, and for our audience, the site evaluation committee is the New Hampshire committee that will decide whether Northern Pass can be sited, built in New Hampshire. I saw some of the Appalachian Mountain Club's witnesses on the stand a couple weeks ago, and I saw you there. Talk a little bit about what your witnesses' testimony was.
Sure. So it was four of our staff, including three members of our research team, Dr. Ken Kimball, who's our research director, Larry Garland, who's a cartographer and GIS specialist, and Dr. David Publicover, who is a forest ecologist and wildlife specialist. So the fourth was Chris Thayer, who is our North Country Programs and Outreach Coordinator, who has worked for the AMC for almost 30 years and spoke to visitor expectations. He's worked in our huts, he's worked in lodges, he's worked with various North Country efforts to expand and grow tourism up there, and has just had countless opportunities to talk with people, both living in New Hampshire and people who are visiting New Hampshire, about what they expect, what they want when they come to enjoy the outdoors in this state. And so his testimony was to say, you know, 160-foot towers in rights of ways, crisscrossing highways and mountains is not what people are coming here to see. And then our research team were speaking again much to the aesthetic impacts, the impacts on scenic trails, scenic outlooks from those trails, and then the forest fragmentation and impacts on wildlife and some very special kinds of natural communities that are found in some of that unfragmented forest that currently exists where the new right-of-way would go through.
Susan, when you say forest fragmentation, what does that mean?
That means that you're going to be, it's like you're dropping a plate and it splits in half, and then you're going to try to glue it together, but there's this big crack down the middle. So what's happening is you're going to build a right-of-way of a couple hundred, 300 feet wide that's going to cut what is currently a forest that's completely contiguous and enclosed, and create this big opening right down the middle of it. And that has the potential to totally change the nature of both the kind of animals and the kind of flowers and plants and birds and everything else that use both the forest at large, because now the forest will be split into two parts, and those edges that get created are a very different kind of habitat than what was there before.
What does Northern Pass have to prove to get approval from the Site Evaluation Committee?
Well, the Site Evaluation Committee has some very explicit tests that they have to have Northern Pass meet in order to agree to give it a permit to build the project. And it includes tests around impacts on economics and development in the state. It includes impacts on natural resources, on aesthetics, and a final really critical impact is they have to make a finding that the project is in the public's interest.
And that's the last one, public interest. That's a new, relatively new test.
That is a relatively new test, although it's my understanding. Initially, there was a test in the Site Evaluation Committee concerning public interest. That language was removed at one point, and now it's been reinstated in some new rules that were adopted by the Site Evaluation Committee about a year ago that try to clarify and make more explicit what are the criteria that they're looking to test when they put out these requirements around aesthetics or public interest.
I don't think I'll ever understand why Eversource didn't propose burying the Northern Pass transmission line down along the side of Interstate 93. If they had proposed doing that, there would have been little opposition to Northern Pass, maybe none. They would have gotten all their permits very quickly because of the lack of opposition, and it would be operating already. And time is money. So I don't, it's just such a penny wise and pound foolish decision.
I agree with you. I mean, I will say I think, 93 through Franconia Notch is challenging. But the larger point you make that they did not consider what we know are any number of other viable alternative routes that could be used to bury this project was a penny-wise, pound-foolish decision. They wanted to use their rights of way. That was sort of the hook for the partnership with Hydro-Québec. That's how Eversource is going to profit primarily from this project, is that, using their rights of way. So, and they just, I think, just figured that they could do what they will, that they had no sense of the kind of unbelievably deep grassroots opposition would grow against this project. I mean, Judy, as you said, we've known each other for almost 30 years, and I don't know about you, but I have never seen such vital, well-organized, and just sustainable grassroots opposition to a single project ever.
I agree with you. And Susan, I've got so much more I want to ask you, but our 30 minutes is up. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and the views of the Appalachian Mountain Club with us and telling us a little bit about the great mission of the Appalachian Mountain Club. And for our listening audience, thank you for listening in. Talk to you again next week.